This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening. This is Inside Story with Sharmila Ganesan and Lee Chwilin. Last week, A. Ganapathy died in the hospital after 12 days in police lockup. This is the latest in a series of deaths reported while in custody. So today we're talking about police custodial deaths and why more needs to be done.
So first, we'll be hearing about this specific case, Ganapathy, from his lawyer. After that, we'll be talking about the larger issue of deaths in prison. And finally, we'll look at the proposed Independent Police Complaints of Misconduct Commission, the IPCMC, and how it could help.
So share your thoughts with us. What needs to be done to address deaths in police custody? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at VFM Radio. This is Inside Story. So, as we said, last week, A. Ganapathy died after a period of detention. Now, his death happened on the 20th of April, and his family is alleging that he was a victim of police brutality. Just to go back to look at the sort of timeline of events that led to his death, Ganapathy was arrested on the 24th of April to aid in an investigation of a sibling who was wanted by the police. He was allowed remand for 13 days. So that was until the 9th of March. But on the 8th of March, he was released and then had to be admitted to the ICU in Selayang Hospital. And that's where he has been since, until he passed away last week. And the family have made a report saying that he had been brutalized, that he had been beaten with a rubber hose by the police, and that he had been healthy at the time of his arrest. But in that time, since he has had to have his leg amputated, he has suffered kidney problems which put him in critical condition, really a whole host of things. And as I said, he passed away sadly last week. And this opens up a conversation yet again about the treatment of prisoners, as well as this question of accountability. Who has oversight when deaths like these occur in custody?
So before we get into the specifics, right, I think it's worth giving a larger context, a look at what we mean when we're talking about custodial deaths. So the Home Ministry reported that a total of 214 people died during detention in the first 6 months of 2020. And according to Dato' Sri Ahmad Zahid Hamidi, who was Home Affairs Minister at the time, there have been over 1,600 deaths in custody from 2010 to February 2017. And the problem here, aside from the fact that those numbers in and of themselves are deeply troubling, right, is that only about one in four deaths in police custody are reported to the public. And that, I think, means that there is perhaps, in the first place, there is an utter lack of transparency in terms of understanding what actually occurs. We've spoken about this before in the past, of how if we talk about, for example, where the cameras are in lockup, where and in fact, what they do, they don't record, right? They're simply there for monitoring purposes. And so I think that just gives one idea of the element of how little transparency there is as to what occurs within these spaces. So that's one issue. The next issue is, if you don't report even what we know has happened, then there is insufficient, public understanding of how deep the issue is, how problematic it is. And I think also we need to understand who it is that we're talking about, because we're not talking about prisoners. We're not talking about people who have been found guilty, who have been convicted of crime. Even if we were, it still would not matter. But nevertheless, we're talking about people who, for one reason or another, found themselves in police custody.
Yes, and just to go through some of those names that you might recognize from having their cases highlighted over the course of really more than a decade that we've been talking about this. Just going back, in July 2020, we had V. Mugilarasu. In November 2019, Muhammad Fazrin Zaidi. February 2017, Balamurugan Supaya. June 2013, P. Karunanithi. May 2013, N. Dharmendran. January 2013, Sugumar Chelladurai. And if you look back, this list just goes on and on. And let's not forget that, again, it's one in four deaths are actually reported, which means for every case that you hear about, there are so many that go unreported. And demographics play into this, background play into this? For instance, we have been hearing a lot about cases of that highlight Indian victims of deaths like these, but then there's enough evidence showing that many Malay people actually make up the majority of official custodial deaths, but then their cases are disproportionately underreported as well. So much opacity in terms of what's going on, and really not enough being done to respond to these questions.
And if we look at some of the responses that have come, they have been from people or rather organizations that have traditionally spoken out about this. So the Teo Beng Hock Trust for Democracy has called on the government to push once more for the Independent Police Complaints and Misconduct Commission, the IPCMC, to investigate the cause of death. Meanwhile, Edict, that is eliminating deaths and abuse in custody together, that organization has urged the AG's chambers to investigate Ganapathy's death as they are empowered to carry that out under Section 339 of the Criminal Procedure Code. And so I think that when we talk about this and when we say the names, when we discuss the cases, it is also worth talking about how little follow-up there tends to be. So when it happens, there is always outcry. There is always horror. There's always this deep concern and push for justice. But then as anything else with the news cycle, when it fades from sight, we stop asking these questions. And so I think that's really in some ways part of the problem and why we do need to give more shine to the organizations that actually push for this day in, day out, because they're the ones who are really going to affect the change.
And so what we want to look at today is really a couple of things. One, we'll be looking at what happened with this latest death, A. Ganapathy. But we'll also be looking, in a larger sense, off this question of police custodial deaths. What causes them to happen? What needs to be done to bridge that gap, to make sure that they don't continue to happen? And we will look at the need for oversight, why the IPCMC plays such a big role when it comes to this, and what are the things that we can be doing in order to make sure that it becomes a reality? So that's what we'll be talking about today on Inside Story. But share your thoughts with us. Tell us what you think needs to be done to address these deaths in police custody. You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 0187898899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Coming up after this, we will be speaking to lawyer Datuk K. Ganesh, who is representing A. Ganapathy in his case, and we'll try to understand what happened there. Keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Build Fairer Malaysia, BFM 89.9.
It's 6:16. This is Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. We're talking about deaths in police lockup following the recent case of A. Ganapathy, who died last week. Just the latest in many cases that have come to light over the last few years. And we're talking about what needs to be done to address these deaths that happen in police custody. You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 0187898899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We are now joined by the lawyer representing Ganapathy's family, Datuk K. Ganesh. Datuk, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So talk to us about what happened with Ganapathy's death. Why are his family and other observers calling for an investigation?
Okay, actually, there are a lot of questions that need to be answered. I do not want to comment on the case proper, but what we want to know is why he was arrested. That's one. But what's more important is why was he held for 12 days? What was the reason for the police to have got a remand, to have kept him for 12 days? And then we found out that he was taken to the hospital no less than 4 times, which means that the wound was pretty bad. And why did the hospital then release him back to the police without treating his diabetic? He's a diabetic and he's got a heart problem. So why wasn't that treated? And further, the family was not allowed to have access to him. I mean, I understand that nobody can interfere with the police investigation. That's fine. But there's nothing to stop them from seeing how he is. They don't have to talk to him. Even a lawyer does not have to talk to his client. The lawyer, most lawyers asked to just see whether the detainees are well. Now, sometimes the police even refuse to allow the lawyer to even have a look. I mean, we don't have to talk to them. So So why are they kept away from lawyers, from families, and families are not informed? And why? So there's so many questions that need to be answered before we can really comment on this case. So that is why now we are trying to find out who are the culprits, how it happened. All we know is when he was arrested, he was absolutely fine. He was walking, he was talking, and he was arrested at a motorbike shop. And there was no reason for anyone to suspect that he was either a diabetic or a heart patient. He was leading a healthy life. So what happened? He was arrested, and then from the arrest, from the lockup, he's sent to ICU. His leg is amputated, and he passes away. So what happened? That is what we need to know.
And we were wondering if you could talk to us also about Ganapati's family. I mean, how have they been dealing with these events?
They are traumatized. The mother is a totally broken woman because, as she knows, that yes, Ganapati may have been mischievous, but not to an extent where he should be treated like a hardened criminal. So, of course, the whole family is devastated. And from what I am sure you would have realized, the report that was lodged, that Ganapati was held to assist in the investigation, the arrest to locate his brother, who was subsequently located. Now, but at the end of the day, the mother wants to know why was the son, who was perfectly healthy, who had dinner and lunch with her, that on that very same day, ended up in the morgue.
Now, I do understand also that his family had trouble getting access to him while he was being held. Could you talk to us about that?
They had absolutely no access to him. They pleaded, and especially when they kept telling, look, please bring us his medicine, please bring us his medicine. They said, look, can we just have a look at him? And then they were informed, look, he's slightly hurt. I mean, of course, you know, can you imagine the trauma that old lady went through, the mother went through, and the family went through? They were not allowed access. I mean, as they told me, look, we did not want to talk to him. We did not want to say, we just wanted to see whether he's okay. Now, there's nothing wrong. There's nothing in the CPC that says the police cannot allow family to see detainees. You know, I mean, okay, fine. They won't impede the investigation by talking. But there's nothing to stop them from seeing. So why would you prevent the family from seeing whether the person is okay? I mean, look, at the end of the day, police are civil servants, they're public servants, you know. So what they do their job, but they also must make sure there's fairness, there's justice. And the family should not be traumatized. Why must the family suffer as a result of police action? Why can't they be open about it? Now, what is wrong with the lawyer or the family members seeing to make sure, okay, fine, the investigation is taking place. We're not going to impede the investigation, but at least we know that he's fine. Now, if that had been done, they could have easily have contacted the hospital and told them about this, or gone to the magistrate and reported that he's in a very bad condition. I'm sure many, many viewers or listeners would have seen the photographs of Ganapati's leg. Now, that injury did not arise overnight. It took over a period of time. So why did they allow it to get so bad before they sent him to ICU? I mean, and secondly, why did the hospital release him? The hospital should have insisted that, look, his sugar level is very high, his gangrene is forming, or whatever is forming. They should have held on to him. They should not have released him back to police custody. The police could have still supervised him in hospital and kept him in remand. That was not done. So there's so many questions that need to be answered. Why did this boy have to end up in the morgue?
You know, Dato, something that I want to get to, just because I think it would be helpful to draw the comparison, right? So yes. Based on everything you've described, the inability for the family to get in touch with their family member, what is actually typical or what is proper and expected when somebody does go into police custody? I mean, what rights do that person and the family have?
Okay. You see, one thing, no one can impede police investigation. Now, the family should be given access to the detainee, and a lawyer also should be given access. I'm not saying that the lawyer be put in a private room to talk with the detainee and tell him what his rights are. No, let the public know, or the family members know, that the detainee is in good health. That's all we want to know. I mean, we're not going to, a lawyer's not going to impede police investigation. So what is it that police are afraid of? You mean to allow a person to even look at it? Okay, if we do not, doesn't have to be face-to-face, let it be through a live CCTV. Let people know that the person who has been investigated is in good health.
Dato, what happens next? What are the next steps that will be taken in Ganapathy's case?
Okay, right now I'm waiting for the IO, ASP Velu from Gombak, who is investigating the case, and he is gathering the evidence. So I hope that he nails whoever hurt Ganapathy, and they're brought to justice. Now, if they say they are unable to locate, I mean, I'm not going to say that he cannot. I hope he does. If he doesn't, then somebody should be held accountable. The person who is going to be accountable for this is OCPD, because at the end of the day, everything is reported to him. Now, he should have known that this boy was suffering and this boy was having a severe injury to his leg. Now, if they still kept him, then somebody has got to be answerable. So if they do not get the person that hurt him, then they should get the person who kept him until his leg got so bad that it had to be amputated and he ended up in the morgue.
Dato, thank you for speaking with us today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, you know. I really appreciate it. And we're just looking to ensure that this doesn't happen again as a family. In fact, I was with the family earlier. Swakam was with them. And the family said, look, they just want justice for what happened to Ganapathy. And the mother repeatedly says, this must not happen to anybody else's son or daughter.
That was Dato K. Ganesh, the lawyer who's representing Ganapathy's family, speaking to us about the details of the case. And we are talking about this issue of deaths that happen in police custody, why they seem to be reoccurring so many times. And we want to know what you think. What do you think needs to be done when it comes to addressing deaths in police custody? You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Coming up, we'll be speaking to Muhammad Al-Shatri, who is the project coordinator with Swaram, to get a wider understanding of this issue. So keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Bigotry-free Malaysia, BFM 89.9. Be free-minded, BFM 89.9.
It is 6:37, coming up to 6:38 really, and this is Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. We're talking about deaths in police lockup. Earlier we heard from Datuk K. Ganesh, who is the lawyer representing A. Ganapathy, the latest case of someone dying while in police custody. So we're asking you what needs to be done to address this. You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, to look at the larger issue of police brutality and deaths in custody, we're now joined by Muhammad Al-Shatri, who is project coordinator at Swaram. He also goes by Matt. Matt, thanks for speaking with us today. Let's start with this question of police custodial deaths. Could you explain why it's something that requires urgent attention?
Pressing matter, as we progress to developing solutions and society, I think the first thing we should look at is how we treat our detainees, right? If we couldn't give them a proper dignity while in custody, or like treat them with respect as a humanity, I think we should really look at how we define ourselves as a society. I think that itself shows how important as pressing as possible.
So it's also been reported that at least in the period from 2010 to 2017, there were over 1,600 deaths in custody. Do we know what causes or what the majority of these deaths have been attributed to in terms of cause?
I would say majority of this case is caused by health issues, other than, yes, I understand that a lot of cases have been highlighted in the media, the police brutality, but most of the cases actually happens because of the health issues of the detainees.
And were those causes further investigated? Are there even ways in which to look into them and to investigate them?
Yes, actually, we do have a process we call inquest that should take place after death in custody. And it would take place in a coroner's court where all involved parties, including the police, the families, and any parties involved would be called and questions to solely first is to find the cause of death. So this is the first things that we should look at when we talk about death in custody. And after that, I think the main one is the inquest. This should take place, and before the inquest took place, usually there will be we should have postmortems where the doctors or pathologists will look at into the cause of death in their medical eyes, and they will give their educated or learned opinions to the inside the coroner's court, and the coroners will after listening to all the evidence and including the coroners and the police and all, will come up with a verdict, whether it's the cause of death is open verdict, whether it's not determined or it's determined by caused by health issues or other factor.
So just to address that point about health, if we look at Ganapathy's case, his family has also claimed that his health deteriorated while he was under remand, and the hospital visits would appear to support that. What is the state of healthcare access in prisons and police lockups?
I would say the state is non-existent at the moment, because under the lockup rule of 1953, actually all detainees need to go through a medical checkup before they went through any custody or been arrested. But this had never been a practice in Malaysia, because one, the police department itself, or police, the balai itself doesn't have enough budget to hire a medical officer to look at the detainee's health. And another is, if there is assessments, there would be only involved questions of police asking detainees before they've been brought into lockup whether they have any health issues. And In terms of Ganapathy case, I would say that he's been brought to the hospital.
Oh no, I think we appear to have lost Matt, unfortunately. The line simply cut out. We're working to get him back on.
Yes, we are working to get Matt back on. But perhaps before that, we'll go on to some ads and get back to him. We are talking about the issue of deaths in police custody, and we want to know what you think. Let us know. You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio, and keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Be free-minded. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:46. You are listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. We're talking about the issue of deaths in police lockup, and we're now continuing our conversation with Muhammad Al-Shatri, Project Coordinator at Swaram, who is giving us an idea of the issue and some of the causes and the challenges when it comes to it. Matt, thanks for being with us today.
Welcome.
I wanted to pick up on one thing that often comes up when we talk about deaths in police custody. We often hear of unverified cases of police brutality along with these cases of deaths. What do we know about whether that actually occurs? What sort of information do we have?
About death in custody in general? Or
about claims of police brutality.
Oh, it's usually when we get a claim of police brutality, usually it comes from the family members of the deceased, usually. So then when we get those cases, we will usually verify with them whether the cause of death, when it's happened, and which police stations this happened. And usually we will go in, meet the family, and also verify with the police and get clarification. But oftentimes we also need help from other departments, especially SOHAKAMS, to go in the prison or the police lockup to look into the matter more detail, because we didn't have that kind of power right now. But SOHAKAMS can and have that power to go inside and take a look at what happened really in the police stations.
Overall, what are some of the main barriers in investigating these deaths? I mean, and does stigma actually play a role in this?
I would say that the biggest challenges that we have is the non-responsive of the police, or like the cover-up of the death when it happens, right? It's not necessarily they try to cover up the death itself, but the cause of death, let's say. So, in just Ganapati cases, we can say that the IO itself doesn't give any, at the beginning, doesn't say to the family that they don't have any evidence of which police officer or like who caused the death at this point of time. When, and surprisingly, that happened in the police stations. It, we can't really pinpoint what happened in the police station. What else? What do we really know in terms of police investigations, right? So I would say the hindrance would be the police itself. They try to cover up all this death and how it really happens.
Matt, thanks for speaking with us today.
Welcome.
That was Muhammad Al-Shatri, Project Coordinator at Suaram, talking to us about police custody deaths here in Malaysia. Earlier, we heard from Datuk K. Ganesh, who is the lawyer representing the family of A. Ganapati, who is the latest casualty of this. And we want to hear from you. What do you think needs to be done to address deaths in police custody? You can share your thoughts. Call us 7732900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, to look at what can be done, what are some measures that can be put in place? We're going to be discussing the proposal of a proposal for the Independent Police Complaints of Misconduct Commission. And for that, we are now joined by Gerald Joseph, Commissioner at Suhakam. Gerald, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, good evening.
Let's start with the role that the IPCMC would play, right? How would it function? What would it encompass?
To be an oversight body, you first of all, it needs to be an independent entity. So the IPCMC was envisaged as an independent commission. And the functions of an oversight body, the IPCMC, would have been to better the mismanagement or complaints against a particular body, in this case, the police. So when we have an independent commission, all it means is that it's going to help improve the functioning of the police. So you will receive complaints, you can advise on better policies, monitoring framework, you'll be able to access the internal mechanics and see how to ensure that it doesn't open up to abuse. So IPCMC was called upon only because we needed something outside the framework of a department, in this instance, the police, who has their own internal mechanism. But, you know, internal mechanisms are never quite as effective. You know, it's like checking on your fellow sister, fellow brother. So you can be a little bit strict, but you know, not have the guts and the courage and the strength to try to go deep in. And that's why many countries have a body such as an IPCMC, where it only focuses on the police. And why the only the police? Because the police, you know, in Malaysia, from birth to death, you really have to inform the police if something happens, something not wrong, not right, until the day you die. Even that, you need to inform the police that a death has happened. So they have immense function, immense role for the greater good of Malaysia, for society. And with that comes a huge amount of power in their hands. And this power is what needs to be moderated, tempered, in the sense that it has to follow the rule of law principles and natural justice. So I think that's what IPCMC was envisaged to be. And I think if we had it in place, we would have seen a decreasing level and amounts of complaints happening already.
And if we tie that to what we're talking about today, how would the IPCMC essentially address this issue of deaths that occur in police custody?
Death in police custody has two strands. One is death happens as natural for all of us who live. But it can happen for many possible reasons. It could be sickness. It could be accident, but the worry is when you come under the responsibility of detention, automatically the responsibility for your well-being goes under the police, in this instance, police lockup. And police lockups by nature is a very short-term thing, 7 days maximum or 14 days, even if you stretch it out. And then if someone dies in that period, then you have worries. How come he went in seemingly okay, and then suddenly he died? And then the questions ask, what were the conditions that made him succumb to death? Was his illness so severe, or was it inflicted upon him? Was there torture? So death in custody actually should not be a framework that can exist and should exist. And police, Suhakam has checked the internal standing orders of the Inspector General. Nowhere I found any inkling of permission for any methods of torture to be used in investigation that may have caused or may cause death in custody. So that's why I think the issue of death in custody should never happen. One is too many, but I can say it can happen that someone may die of natural causes. He could be very sick and so happen is in. But this needs to be independently verified. So if you have a custodial medical unit, like doctors at hand, which is now what Suhakam is working with the police to launch it very soon, that must be a first layer. But even if that is verified by a doctor, then you need another body who will come in and say, hey, let me look at what you did. Did you stand up to the mark? You check every mark on his body on time. You report that there was some misgiving. Why was there silence and why was there cover-up? So I think this is the kind of inquiry that can only happen from an independent external body.
So last year there was it was tabled to have the Independent Police Conduct Commission, the IPCC, but many activists have said that this is a watered-down version of the proposed IPCMC and that it won't be as effective. Could you tell us why?
Well, I think from the word go, the resistance to the formation of an independent police management complaints commission already had resistance from the police, from the home ministry, from many people who were thinking that they were duty-bound to defend the image of the police. For me, the image has been battered, tattered, by waves of torture allegations and death in custody in the last 2-3 decades. So it's our common responsibility to ensure that we have something to clean up the name, to better the name of the police, given it's some people in the force that think they have impunity to go ahead. And so when we were setting up the IPCMC, and Suhakam was fully in support of a setting of another agency, while Suhakam has its own investigating powers to inquire into any allegations of torture and death in custody at present. But we think a totally dedicated force on the police really would help move us forward. But the resistance, when we were doing, even the last Pakatan Harapan government, we were really about to celebrate the last days of the parliament, suddenly the bill got pulled out because, again, resistance from inside, they wanted to temper the bill a bit. And now, when the new government has come in, they have come up with something called the IPCC. And what's the logic? Basically saying, why are you targeting only the police? I'm not targeting the police. I'm cleaning up the image of the police. So you want to water down, so you want independent oversight, you want reporting mechanisms. So some of the provisions of the body to investigate, to bring them to justice have been brought down much more. But I think the logic of an IPCC was to take away some of these provisions that they felt were too much seemingly going into the police and almost accusing them of being a bad body. So I think if this new government is serious about an independent body, it should actually have the courage to stand up to the police. And recently, even the IGP said there's cartels internally. I mean, that's as good as admission that the rot is deep and it needs to be cleaned up. And it cannot be cleaned up from internally. Neither KDN, Home Ministry, or the police themselves can be expected to do it, because they are all elements who are compromised, who are part of this cartel. So if the government is serious to clean Malaysia up, start with the police force, start with this 217-year-old force that is doing great service for the country, but it gets tarnished too often, and the death in custody, the recent cases, bring to question why was there even a need for somebody to have been tortured if you had evidence. So it should be evidence, investigation for prosecution, not arrest with the hope of groping in the dark to find something, which is what's happened in many cases, and then using that and the method of investigation now still borders on the old style of interrogation. We still get, Suhakam still gets quite a few complaints about allegations of torture happening. Even in the last 2 weeks, we've received some memorandums from family members. So I think a watered-down IPCMC will not stand the test of time, but definitely we are long overdue for an independent commission for the management of police and police complaints.
Gerald, thanks for speaking with us today. That was Gerald Joseph, Commissioner at Suhakam. You've been listening to Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.